Welcome to the Weekend Podcast. Just a quick little note before I start. We recorded this podcast on Thursday evening. Now, I say that because Pete asked me about the share price of Plarium, which has risen by over 50% this week. And Thursday was his only down day. And so Pete asked me, where do you think the share price is going to go from here? And I said, well, it could consolidate here. But when you have a stock like this, which is going to be, I think, the new standard in pulmonary sort of investigational sort of tech, you know, around the world, were truly groundbreaking, then who knows where it'll go. And of course, the dips get bought, and that's momentum. And when you get, you know, powerful momentum in a stock, you don't know where it could go. You can it writes new rules. It can get massively overbought. So when you get normal levels on a chart, look at 70 on the RSI as overbought, this can shoot up to 90, and it can stay there for a while. So it will come back eventually a little bit and consolidate, but then I think that'll get bought again, and that's when more momentum sets in. So I just want to put that in context. We recorded this on a Thursday night. Hope the podcast provides some value for you.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
How dare you have a life outside of the podcast? So rude. I must admit, I completely forgot as well. I've just started cutting up my dinner, so I'm going to continue to do that.
Cutting up your dinner? Steve, sorry, how old are you, Steve?
Cutting up your dinner.
So just let me start here. Welcome to the Weekend Podcast. Trying to get a hold of Paddy. He's just coming back from weightlifting. Whoa, I'm in his mate of weightlifting. See, heavy weights. Whoa, make me strong. Big arms, big chest, all that stuff. And Steve is, he's late, as you just heard. He's cutting up his dinner. What are you having, Steve?
It's a homemade stir fry.
I see. Well, it's going to be a homemade course, isn't it? Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Right, that's true, yeah.
You're chopping it up, so...
It's not one of those packet ones. I'm making it from scratch.
Oh, I love the term from scratch, do you? And I also have a mate before. Say I make it from scratch. What do you do? Well, I chop the onions, and then I add, what's his name?
Uncle Ben's
sweet sour sauce. that is not from scratch. He said, well, it is more from scratch than ordering from a takeaway. It's from scratch. But I mean, you know, I think that use a sauce is a lot easier. Add stuff to it, yeah? Use a sauce, add stuff to it, Steve. That's the way to go, isn't it?
No, because I've gone away from the stir fry sauces. I now do just like soy sauce and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, do you know what? Listen, my favorite two sauces of all time, right? A sweet chili sauce and soy sauce. You can add those to any dish, and it makes it tasty. Doesn't matter what you're eating. You could be eating bits of cardboard.
Well, can I recommend one to you? To add to your soy sauce.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how it's pronounced exactly. It's called ketchup mantis. Is that it?
I don't know. Ketchup mantis sounds like a disease.
It's ketchup mantis.
It's tomato ketchup.
Yeah. Well, have you heard?
It's the bottle upside down.
Have you heard that guy? That sauce was invented by that Welsh Chinese guy from the valleys.
Bob.
Teriyaki. Terry, see? Oh, he's a lovely sauce, Terry. Teriyaki, he called it. No, do you know what? Megan went to the shops the other day. We're going to get the stocks in a bit. Okay. But show us the home bargains.
What, stock cubes?
And they went to the home bargains of the day, and they went to, stock cubes next. And they had, he's here all podcast. And they went to home bargains, and all these sauces. What are they called? The famous sort of soy sauces. That range, but they had teriyaki, they had satay sauce, they had sweet chili sauce, all on reduced. And she bought loads of them, filled the cupboard. So everything now, I just add those sauces to it. Don't matter what I have, to be the most basic sandwich in the world. Add a bit of teriyaki. Lovely. Lovely indeed. Hoisin. Yes? He's another Welsh fella. All right, Hoisin. Right, Steve, what are you using?
He's chopping up his dinner.
Steve!
We're doing a podcast.
I need to sharpen my knife. I think that's what's
annoying. This is not Saturday Morning Kitchen. It's a weekend podcast with stocks.
Pretty much all of the listeners have now turned off.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what I want to talk about? The markets and COVID, right? We are getting to fear, aren't we? Height of fear. Everything's getting locked down. In fact, tier two. Steve's in. What tier are you in, Steve?
Tier two.
Tier two. London Essex tier two, Liverpool tier three, I think. What is the difference between tier two and tier three?
They start to lose the bars and restaurants.
No, they're all like that. Tier two and tier three and tier one.
Well, no, tier two, they're not closing restaurants and bars.
Oh, okay. Tier two, they close everything. Yeah, they get more. People want to be in tier three, though, don't they? People don't now.
Why?
Businesses don't want to be in tier two. Because they said basically.
No, tier three's the high one.
Yeah, I know. But you get financial support.
Yeah, you're forced to close. Yeah.
Yeah, so which is ridiculous. When in tier two, you get no customers, but no financial support. So, you know, so it's ridiculous. But I don't understand this, you know. The Labour are playing politics, saying let's lock down everything. And I think, hang on a second. We did that previously. We're still back where we are now. What's changed? If we do it for 2 weeks now, nothing's going to change. We locked down for 2 weeks. It's going to cost the government a lot of money, people lots of jobs, and then we'll come back out, and the R figure will go up again, won't it? Because, I mean, and also, if you do go really extreme and lock everyone down, so this is all sorted out, and then people are unlocked, people go to the extremes then, don't they? And they're like, right, let's go and party. We can go out and party and, you know, mingle.
Yeah.
And so I just think... Nothing will change. I don't understand why. All you have to do now is be sensible, you know, social distance a little bit. Don't mix with people anyway. Mainly people are annoying, you know, generally. Spend too much time. So social distance.
It's easier said to say, like, it's easier for us to say that because we're old and we've done it all. But when you're, like, teenagers, it's quite hard to do that.
Yeah, no, I understand. As teenagers, you are, you know, you're hardwired to socialise and party, you know, and you're literally trying to lock that down is like trying to come off a drug, you know, and I understand that. In fact, My cousin Henry, he's got COVID.
Oh, right.
Yeah, but didn't know, asymptomatic. That seems to be the way, isn't it? If you're younger, you don't know you got it. And why has he got it? Because he went to see his mates who were students in Bristol. They were at a party, and they all caught it, of course. And that's where it's coming from. But that's not, to me, that's not a bad thing. As long as you stay away from, like, now he's now staying away from my parents, you know, which is good.
Yeah.
And his parents have been tested as well, which is a good thing. So as long as you stay away from the vulnerable, it's good. It's not a bad thing spreading it amongst people who can handle it. That's the way to go forward. In six to 8 months, you know,
we'll be
back to normal.
Yeah, I would have thought so, yeah. Yeah, well, sort of... That whole herd immunity thing, there's got to be an element of truth in that. It's not going to work universally, but it'll kind of, surely there must be.
Didn't they say, I couldn't believe when I heard the news this week, they said some people have caught the coronavirus the second time. And then they said it was six people across the whole world.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
That's amazing. That's brilliant. There's only
six
people.
That's what I mean. It's small. So herd immunity won't work, perhaps, you know, there won't be quite herd immunity. But, yeah, there are going to be anomalies. There's always going to be anomalies, aren't there? But, you can't help feeling... Got to kind of keep some sense of normality. We'll get back to some sort of...
Well, think about it now. This is what I think, right? The second wave, they're all trying to put the fear of God into us, right? But NHS capacity wasn't taken up in the first wave. We had all those NHS Nightingale hospitals. They were empty, you know, which is not a bad thing, I know. But so why are we fearing the second wave? Because now we have drugs, therapeutics that can help you survive. If you're in the vulnerable category, the stuff Trump took, basically, dexamethasone and all this stuff, and remdesivir and all that. That kind of stuff now can help people. The survival rate's gone up massively. The deaths aren't there. So surely the second wave, the vulnerable were thrown to the dogs in the first wave anyway. You know, the old people who moved out of beds in hospitals, put into old people's homes, and it didn't protect the old people's homes. That's why our death rate is so high. So the second wave, why are we fearing it so much? I think the NHS can cope, and I really do. I mean, last time they just shut everything down anyway. They coped anyway. I know it was hard work for a lot of them, but I don't think it's bad this time. They've got therapeutics, and I think we are more prepared this time anyway. You know, it took us by surprise a little bit last time. I mean, we were aware it was coming, but, you know, we still didn't have enough PPE equipment. We didn't have the drugs. But now we've got all that. And so I think we're more, you know, ready for the second wave. I mean, really? What's the big deal? I don't understand the big deal of locking everyone down. Because if you lock everyone down, it'll just flare back up when everyone goes back out. So we just sort of live with it for a while.
Everyone understands it better now, don't they, surely? So.
Yeah, exactly. The media are annoying because they keep highlighting those scenes of partying and all that. That doesn't happen everywhere. The majority of people in the country are abiding by the rules. They're washing their hands. They're social distancing. You know, they're working from home if they can. They're all doing that stuff. You know, and so I think... we've got to just live with it. And like I said, Pfizer, as long as there's no pauses in the phase three trials, then they will have figures out close to the end of this month or just, you know, listen, Trump's got his, you know, he's on the phone to the Pfizer CEO every day. Come on, get the figures out. And so there's been a couple of pauses, if you notice that. There's three companies now have paused the clinical trials because they've had adverse reactions. But that's not a bad thing. It's like Johnson & Johnson are testing 60,000 people. They've had one adverse reaction. AstraZeneca are testing up, 20,000 people, I think it is, or 30,000 people, and they had one adverse reaction. That was someone with a spinal cord condition anyway. So AstraZeneca now has been gone back, everywhere apart from the US, it's now back in working order, still on pause in the US. I think Eli Lilly as well, another pharmaceutical company, has gone on pause. But these pauses are good things because it shows the system's working. You know, if you get an adverse reaction, you stop and you investigate and then you can move on. But yeah, listen, we're going to have good news in the next couple of months. And like I said, 6 to 8 months, even in fact, you know Clive Dickens? No, Clive, not Clive Dickens. Clive, what's his name?
Clive Dix.
Clive Dix, yes. Clive Dix from C4XD. Did you know he was actually deputy big man of the vaccine task force, yeah.
Was he? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, this week, I don't know if you...
Really?
Know,
is he?
Yes. He's deputy chair.
That's it.
So the steering board for the UK.
Okay. So has that just been announced?
Sort of, yeah. June.
Right.
So he sits in the chair with the steering wheel. He's in charge of steering the bus, the task force bus. There's obviously the boss is Kate Bingaman, as she is. Is that her name? She's the big boss. She's basically, you know, he's the bus driver. She's at the conductor, you know. So that's the way it is. And so, but she said... we probably won't have a vaccine, all of us, until July next year. But everyone thought, oh, we're not going to have a vaccine until July. No, well, she didn't mean that. She meant everyone. I mean, the vulnerable people will probably start being, you know, like in America, they'll be done by Christmas. So we've got 6 to 8 months, I think, before we get back to normal-ish, you know, that new normal, which is probably close to the old normal. But it's going to get better along the way because we'll have more drugs coming out, you know, finally released. We'll have the extremely vulnerable being, tested and all that stuff, being vaccinated and all that. And then, it'll slowly get back. And, of course, the fundamentals of companies won't get back to normal straight away. Because, like I said, we were talking about on the podcast on Thursday with Chris Bailey, talking about Amazon. They own, the Bullring in Birmingham Shopping Centre. Mm. They own Brent Cross. People are not going to rush back to the shop straight away. They've only been getting 40-odd percent of their rents, you know? Yeah. And so there's people like that are suffering into as well, they're going bust and all that stuff. So they're suffering, and people, that won't recover straight away. But the stock market runs ahead of all that, you know? When the stock market sees light at the end of the tunnel, it starts to rally because you realise it's a forward-looking thing that you are valuing companies, you know, the companies on the line. So so I just genuinely think, now the fear is in. Last time the fear was in, a lot of people just sold and run to the hills, like in March. Because let's be honest, in March we didn't know when it was going to end. But now... Mm. We can see a little pinprick of light at the end of the tunnel, can't we? No offence, Steve.
No worries. So do you think you're going to make your most money out of this?
Yes! Yeah, it's going to rally like crazy, honestly. Once you mentioned one stout, we will wake up one morning this month. I'm prepared to say within the next 6 weeks, right? And you'll get something like Pfizer, or let's go 8 weeks then. Next 2 months, they'll come out with, first of all, you know, positive clinical trials completed, in a readout from one of the big companies. What do you think? That will be massive news, won't it?
Mm.
Trump will be all over it.
Yeah, yeah.
I pushed these guys, you know. He's got 80 million followers on Twitter, that guy. He'll be on every news outlet. Because let's be honest, we are under the cosh. I'm so sick of COVID, you? Everywhere you turn. I've tried to switch it off a little bit, then I'm a bit addicted to it. And now I'm starting to read about vaccines on a daily basis. And I think, but I genuinely think we'll rally, a broader rally, not just a tech rally we had last time, we were nuts and all the tech stocks rallied, but a broad rally, you know, of companies that have been hammered down. And hopefully, because, of course, once we start getting the first vaccine out, you're only 6 months away till everyone's been, 6 to 12 months away from everyone being, inoculated. And
So are you saying, from your point of view, a rally across the board of the stocks you hold, or there are particular stocks that you think in the foreseeable, you know, coming few weeks, there'll be ones that you'll buy in preparation for a rally?
I've taken my positions, you know. I'm in there. I'm taking positions now, I think. Scaling slowly now. But once we get that news, you know, things will jump. Things will move.
But some stocks have rallied haven't they, from the lows?
Well, COVID-related stocks like testing companies, yes. Tech stocks, yes.
Things like
EasyJet and all the travel stocks haven't. They've been hammered.
That's what I was getting to. So there are some of those kind of sectors where are still hammered. Are you looking at some of them or not?
I'm taking my position. If you look at my, companies there, then in fact, a lot of them are insulated from it. The new one stock I have, it's been hammered down as a leisure stock. As I mentioned before, is Escape Hunt. I do think it'll rally strongly because they were growing. They were growing very nicely before COVID. And you're talking about 40-odd% improvement year on year. And then they're locked down. There was no worry about lack. In fact, Basingstoke is supposed to be launched, guys. Basingstoke is open.
Awesome.
You can book Basingstoke now.
I should have mentioned that on the WhatsApp group. I didn't know that.
Just seen it on Twitter this evening. So you can book on Basingstoke. So I'm going to book that. You can't come down there, can you? Because you're locked in, Steve. There's five things you can do there, though. Five different experiences.
Steve's got his own escape room. It's called his house.
Cardiff.
Yeah. So you can do Aladdin, Alice in Puzzleland, Our Finest Hour, a VR adventure, Mission Sigma, and a VR adventure, Survival. You can also do... I didn't realise this, Steve.
I think I'm locked down as well.
Well, don't worry. I'll take the family, yeah? Don't worry. They're a quality outfit. I genuinely think, like I said, it will be a market leader... They are growing. Yes. There's no lack of demand for the quality escape room experience. In fact, you now do ones via Zoom. Have you seen that? Very clever. What you do is you can book it via Zoom. You've got a games room master who basically has a camera, and you tell him, you look at all the clues. He can give you clues as well. But you can do it, say, four or five guys on Zoom cameras. You all pay, obviously, and they do it for you. So you can do it virtually as well.
Cool. Okay.
That's good, isn't it? It's good the way they...
Not sure. That bit's my cup of tea, personally. But now I own part of the company, I will obviously go and check it out.
I just saw a video. If you on LinkedIn, they've got videos of it. Nice guy called James explains it, and they have like four other people on Zoom as well, all young people. And it doesn't look quite. It works because he sort of gives them clues, and he goes, "Oh yeah, start the course." They're trying to work it out. They're talking to each other, of course. It's fine if you know. I think for corporate things, and that's what they're heading for, is corporate as well. For corporate things, if you're around the world, it's a fun thing. It's half an hour out, or 45 minutes, I think. And it's a bit of fun.
Team building.
Mm-hmm. But of course, listen, and this is the thing, you know. I mean, Basingstoke is the 11th operational site now in the UK. They're going to have some impact. The ones in Edinburgh, Manchester, Liverpool, of course, I think. But again, if they have to shut down, if they're in Tier 1, they get financial help for that. So they save money, you know, so it's not a problem. But mention that Hammerson, like I said, in their report, which was quite amazing, they said they get offered sites they wouldn't have been able to afford before COVID. So high footfall, you know, top end sort of central location sites. So it's very good.
Just going back on the whole your portfolio as a whole, and I'm just looking at mine. And I think some of my famous last words, but I sort of think the way that I've moved out of, like, I had some funds and some exposure to bigger FTSE stocks, and then they obviously crash and burn. But I've recovered my portfolio value through small cap stocks that are on a journey and have done quite well in the last few months. And I sort of feel, like I say, famous last words, they are a little bit insulated from other crashes because they've got, you know, take Polarian, for example. It's doing a great job at the moment, flying along. And even lockdown and whatever it throws at it, I can't see it really stopping its progress because it's going towards the FDA approval. Am I missing something?
No. Polarian, right? Ideal, isn't it? First of all, it's medical tech. There's no other device out there. This will be... And Richard Hullahan, the CEO, is very understated. And he says, I hate to say breathtaking and mind-blowing, but our tech compared to everything out there is. Ours is not even harmful. And that the old tech is. So why wouldn't it be given pass in fast-track status when, I don't know if you saw today, NHS now have already provided 10 million of funding for investigational work into long COVID, you know, some symptoms of people with lungs, heart damage. You can't look at lungs properly without their tech. It's you know, this has expanded their market massively. And what I like about Polarian, it's got from 45 pence to, 70 pence in the last five sessions. And this, this is a start. It's valued at 100 million. It could be 10 times this from here when it gets commercial. And, you know, like I said, Canada, one of the biggest cancer centres in the US just ordered one of the machines this week. That says a lot. You know, when you get the biggest cancer centre in the US ordering one of the machines, and that's one of, I think, 25 out there at the moment, 25 machines, you know, peer-reviewing, people using them, big institutions. It'll fly. This will be, and I genuinely think it'll be the industry standard for pulmonary investigative work. It adds value to their MRI scanners because it just adds on to that basically. So it's compatible with that. So it'll be huge. And what I like about this is when you see momentum build. If you look at the last 3 days when it rose quite bigly, volume went up as well. It went like the first day. And like, what is it, 674,000, close to a million shares. Next day, close to a million. Next day, even more. The volume keeps pushing up. And what happens is people think, oh, I'll wait for a pullback. And then you have 2 days of rising, I'll wait for a pullback. 3 days, people just start jumping in. And that, you know, the fear of missing out is going to go to the moon, and it can. And like you said to me, Pete, now we have, you know, the whole market sold off on Thursday. We're recording this Thursday night. And you said, where do you think it'll come down to now? Support level? Well, support level's at 50. I don't think it'll get that down there. I mean, last time it broke out there, because what you've got now is it's a well-known stock. It's a well-known story. It's going to be valued a lot higher than this in a couple of years' time. So people just think, well, I'll just go for it now. I don't want to miss out. And so it may drop. Any dip now is going to be bought. It depends how big that dip, you know, how much that dip gets bought. It will depend how much it'll fall, of course. But I think there'll be people now. Fear of missing out is a massive emotional pull. So that's why I say you've got to get in early. Before this happens, you know, like I said, we were talking about this for over a year now. What, more than a year and a half? When it was down at the, you know, in the. In fact, remember, we talked this about in '20s, some of that. Yeah, in the '20s. So it's like 68 pence. This is just the start, honestly. This will be all over the world. These machines will be all over the world, and it's like I said, they compete against 40-year-old tech that's harmful for you. And this is, it's a no. I hate to say no-brainer, because nothing's a no-brainer, but of course it'll be a bit volatile. And even if they don't get fast-track clearance, that'll probably create a bit of a sell-off. People think, oh, they're not going to get past. No, it's nothing to do with that. Even that may create a bit of a buying opportunity. But if it gets that fast-track clearance, I think it'll go nuts. So any dip before that, and that's within... So looking at timelines here, I've got a list of stocks I own, and the timelines. So October, Gfinity. In fact, October, Escape and Site 11 Basingstoke just announced that they have. December, Polarian, response from FDA on priority review. So I'll say whether they fast track it by about 4 months. Also, C4XD, December 1st, phase one completion, milestone payment due. December, Escape Hunt, Site 12, probably Cheltenham opening. So they're going to try and open, they're going to try open one every month. Sorry, it's November, isn't it? I think. Yeah, so.
How many will they close? No, I'm kidding.
But the thing is, they said that when they're going to afford to be in higher, you know, quality spaces, there's less chance of them ever folding because they are really. Yeah. You can't be in a better place. So November, that is. December. So it's going to be a big month of this December because you've got C4XD and Polarian. Two big bits of news there. Talking about Gfinity, right?
Yes.
Did you see that? Did you read that article? It's a bit of a fake one from they're called from Guild Sports. Guild was just launched, of course. Everyone says David Beckham. Everyone says David Beckham's model. You know, he's the investor behind this. He's a clever businessman, David Beckham. I tell you what, he is a clever businessman. They paid him $20 million to become an investor.
Is that true?
Yeah. It's in the prospectus. Wow. Yeah.
Wow, right, okay.
So he's probably put no money into it. He's probably taken his thing. He's probably put back into it.
Yeah, he has money in it. And so.
Name, isn't it? Yeah.
So wow. He got his shares at 1 pence as well. They floated at 8 pence. It's nice, isn't it? Literally. So Beckham, the compensator, before Beckham was an investor, they were entered into an influencer agreement with Footwork Productions, a Beckham-owned company that was set up for the exploitation of Beckham's names and image rights. 5-year deal, which was inked in May, and compensates Beckham for being the face of Guild Sports with a minimum amount of $15 million during the term of the contract. And he also gets, additionally, Yes, do one photo shoot, one TV video shoot, make two public appearances, and complete 12 social media posts about Guild annually. In return, gets an annual fee, the amount equivalent to 15% of the proceeds of all Guild's merchandising sales and sponsorship of revenues during the term. However, Guild agreed a minimum payment of 2.25 million the first year, 2.5 for the second year, 3 million for the third year, 3.5 the fourth year, 4 million for the fifth year. Go. So, literally, and he owns only 4%. Isn't he valued at 40 million? And yet, he owns less than 5% of the stock, which has been paid to him in money anyway.
Nice work if you can get it.
That's nuts, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you just realise all the hype surrounding it.
Yeah.
And you think, people just thought, it's his company. It's not. He's basically charging them to be associated.
I've got an idea for Gfinity about Paddy, weightlifter.
Yeah, yeah.
Big sports guy now. Yeah. Big global reach.
They will give you Pad a tenner first year, £15 second year. Gfinity doesn't need that. It's like, literally.
No.
You know, right. It's earning revenue. It doesn't need Paddy or Beckham. You know, it's already heading towards, you know, the revenue from its content alone is growing, you know, massively. It's gone from nothing, like it had nothing 6 months ago, and I think they earned, let me just look at the last bit of news. It was literally, what was it by? Strategic Review. So then they earned like, 130 grand of revenues in September, just from nothing 6 months ago to that. And that's growing, if you look back, it's growing like, but it's almost like 20-30% a month. That's just one part of the business, of course. They're going to be profitable in Q1 next year, and I'm just thinking, there aren't many profitable esports businesses around. They've already got it going on with, you know, partnerships with BT, F1. They've got their own sort of virtual racing competition as well, sponsored. So it's on, you know, BT and ESPN, and yet it's still around 30 million market cap. That's all it is. So you can see why they're doing what they're doing, because I think a bigger. In fact, did you see that? Public disclosure. Yeah, there's a lot of things going through, offering.
Well, I was going to say a billionaire horsed. Joachim Franz Geki, whatever his name is.
German guy.
I haven't done his name justice there. Apologies. It was announced he's taking like about 4% of the company, hasn't he, this week? Which again, I took as pretty good news.
Yeah. He's a big German investor, and he's big in the Far East as well. And of course, the Far East is massive, huge as far as it's one of the most. Esports is one of the most popular ventures out there, sort of pastimes out there. It's massively growing out there. So I think there's some connection there. I don't know what's going on. It's still a little bit of a mystery happening here. There's something going on. I don't know what's going on, though. I'm still looking forward to what is actually going on. Public opening position disclosure. There's lots of RNSs coming out, which I don't know what they mean, really. Full name disclosure. Offery. I have no idea. But... I think sooner or later we're going to see
your live reading an RNS. That's never going to work.
Well, the volume is very hard, isn't it? It's very big at the moment. The volume is like average daily volume every day. Then you see some big chunky ones go through, and I think, what's going on here? I don't understand what is going on. Something's happening, and I can't, because I was used to looking at the volume of GV, it's quite orderly, but now it's literally all over the place, and I don't know what's going on. There's something very interesting going on, but I don't understand what it is.
Beyond us.
Yeah. I'm not complaining in the meantime.
No, exactly. How much a bit of porf you got in there, Steve?
I'm probably a good... Oh, God, actually about 40%. That's quite bad, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, it's not bad if you just go up, is it? It's just...
it's not good. But at the same time, I do sit there going, especially we had those rises last week, I was like... Oh, probably take a bit of that out. But then if I had taken that out before, when I wouldn't have made even more money on it. So it's a bit of a...
Well, the thing is, like I said to John on the podcast, you know, John Clark, the worst that can happen is nothing comes of this. I don't believe that will happen, though. And you're still a profitable company, you know, doing well, heading in the right direction. So there may be a bit of sentimental disappointment over nothing happening coming. But again, the business is still improving. It's a 30 million market cap in esports, where there are companies. There's such a hot space here. They're paying loads of money just to float and get Beckham on board, an association. But it's nuts the amount they're paying him. That's nuts. When you're at that level, you can't lose, can you? It astounds me sometimes how you can lose money when you get a certain level of fame. because you do get these people going bankrupt. You think, how have you gone bankrupt? The people are chucking their money at you. Yeah. So it's a good. I just started watching it on Netflix, Billionaire Bad Boys, and the first one is about this Indian billionaire who had Kingfisher beer, and he went into airlines. And of course, he got really flash and started buying Formula One and all this stuff. And he went into airlines.
He went
into airlines because in India they said you've got to encourage in their government documents. They said you've got to encourage prohibition, and that means try and stop alcohol sales. So they banned all adverts. So basically, he bought an airline called a Kingfisher. This is the biggest advert I've ever seen in my life for a beer. But it started doing well. He did a low cost. You got the guy in from America who's in charge of one of those low cost American airlines there. Did very well. Then he started getting a bit flashy. He wanted to put first class in there. And the guy from America was a different business. If you're into low cost, even bringing extra row of seats, taking one out, changes the business model. So when you start messing around and bring nice meals and drinks and all that, it's a different model altogether. So then he just left and it started going, and he bought a Formula One team and all that stuff, and it started going a bit wrong.
Yeah. He's the guy behind Force India, wasn't he? That guy.
Yeah. So just checking. It's the first in the series, I think, I will check it out.
I'm just thinking, really, looking at my portfolio, and I think you're all in the same position. It's like you've got these quite a few that are on hopefully a good trajectory now. I'm not investing in anything new really at the moment, or any not looking at anything new. It's just, so it's kind of boring, but boring is good, isn't it?
Do you know what we've pivoted, right? Like I said, I've been under a mission over the last few, after looking at companies that have done sort of super well over the last 5-10 years that are not microcaps and have been sustained. The rise has been sustained, and the reason why the rise has been sustained is because they've started earning, and their growth has been very good. Their growth is basically on revenue and profit has gone up over 20% compound annual growth, and those were like the Boohoo's, the JD Sports, what else was the game workshop, all that stuff, and you realise, right, I'm going to look for companies that are heading towards a profit, which means they'll start sustaining their value generation, and that profit will grow and the revenue will grow. So I'm looking at companies that are going to be growing quickly and be sustainable rise. And that's why you don't have to shop around. Like with resource companies, they release good news, like I say, they'll pop, and then a couple of weeks later they'll probably drop because they realise they still haven't got any money. They're not going to be generating any money for like 3-4 years. And that generating money is real value generation. That's why share prices go up. So, they'll say, we've just done a pre-feasibility study that shows our project has got a net present value of $400 million. So okay, so that's what's in the ground with all the cost taken out. That's what it's worth. Yeah, but you've still got to raise lots of money to get it. It'll take you 3-4 years to get permitting, to raise the funds, to get debt, all that stuff. So it's years. So I want to get companies on the edge of generating that cash, and then that cash will be growing for years. And if you look through the portfolio there, like I said, they're all there. For example, Gfinity, it's going to be profitable and growing, right? You've got On the Market, it's now just made a maiden profit. It's going to be growing and profitable. Salt Lake Potash, it's going to be generating cash next year. It's going to be generating positive cash flow by June. It starts producing in March. By June, it's going to be, and that'll build next way it is. Polarian, of course, they're heading towards their major commercial decision with the FDA. Once they are commercial, they can start making lots of money and rolling these out. So those are companies you don't have to mess around with. You can hold Escape Hunt, Site 15, probably 16, Breakeven 15, Profitable 16. They're already signed up 14, legally bound contracts of 14 already. So they're one away from breakeven. I mean, of course, you have to make a bit of leeway because they're not operating at full capacity because of COVID. But they've got enough cash to get them through to break even, and then profitability. And if they have no revenue, they can last for 9 months. They've got revenue, even now, right now. Okay, they're taking an impact on, like I said, Liverpool up north, but they will get. Yeah. They've stated, out there, they've got a midterm target of 20 sites, top line target, longer term target of 50 sites, which will make them a 10 bagger on the EBITDA. And that's not including all the virtual reality stuff and the franchisees business. So I just think, if you look at them compared to any other operator out there, their quality is way better than anyone else. And they've also got minimum, like I said, in basis, they've got 5 experiences you can do there. Not just one, it's 5 different kinds of experiences there. 2 virtual reality, 3 rooms. And like I said, the hookups to Netflix and BBC, they're the best operator. I just find it really odd. It's $4 million. And that's what it's priced in. The fear is priced in. This is the time to buy when fear is at the highest. That's the only stock I've got really is in leisure. Though everyone else is sort of Gfinity gets busier when it's locked down.
It's amazing how every conversation comes back to the skate hunt.
Because I'm trying to hammer home the opportunity. So I'm going to turn the heating off.
Okay.
I'm in my office. So it was freezing when I got in here. I've left it on to... No, because, listen, right? Some of them have risen already, right? I mean, the last two stocks I bought obviously haven't because I've just bought on the market. I missed out the big rise from the sell-off, of course. But I'm gonna do a video this weekend on five stocks and their roadmap to 10 bags, right? And or valuation 10, uplift like 10 on the markets there. I don't think people saw that. I don't think people saw that in the market. Essentially, their interim results, right? First of all, maiden profit. Secondly, their revenue went up 28%. And that was including discounts, they did customer support discounts for COVID-19 for customers of 1.8 million. So if you add that 1.8 million, which they just took off because they let a lot of customers have their discount, that's 12 million for the first half of this year. That's up from 8 million last year. That's a 50% increase in revenue. That's phenomenal. Now, this is the quiet time of year. From February up until the busy time of the year is January, so it gets busier just before and after Christmas. So you can say, January is their record month. Yeah, January, I don't know, it's almost like...
springtime is normally there.
January is the record month, the record-breaking month. Okay. Literally, you can add, right move as well, the site visits and everything. And also because we're on a couple of flats, we've noticed that. They say don't put anything on the market just before Christmas. After the market, they all go nuts because you have people breaking up or moving out after Christmas, Christmas with the family or even kids or, they bought a house and they're moving in. So it's really busy time of the month. And so I think if they did 12 million, pretty much with a discount in the first half. They did 12 million in the second half quite easily. That's 24 million. That's a 32% increase on last year, which is, I think they should do more than that now because they're gaining a lot of traction. And they're also, what they didn't do over the COVID period as well, they didn't convert any customers on low tariff or on free tariffs. And they've got about 3,000 of those. They stopped doing that because they realized it's a tough time, lockdown, we didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. So now they're going back to doing that. They're converting customers, and they do that by saying, look, you're getting average monthly leads now of 149 leads per month per advertiser. That's comparable with Rightmove. We're charging you a third less than them. So they will convert lots more in this final 6 months of the year. Biggest month is January. I think they could do 25 million this year in revenue compared to 18 million last year, 33% up. So that's excellent growth.
The problem with the whole stamp duty thing will be a big thing until March, won't it?
Yeah, of course. And also, but someone said that to me, said, house prices, though, just rather could lift from stamp duty. I said, well, yeah, but if you look at, Rightmove, so on the markets, metrics, they've been improving for over 3 years anyway, so you can't put that all down to the current stamp duty thing. So it's literally they are now becoming a real challenger to Rightmove, and they're nowhere near the valuation of them. Like I said, 66 million on the market, Rightmove 5.8 billion. And so it will be a tipping point. And I'm checking the emails every day, and that just shows stock levels. And I think now stock levels, I don't think on the market that far off from Rightmove, because I'm getting more emails on my search criteria, which is exactly the same for Rightmove and on the market. And I'm getting more emails from on the market because, of course, I've got a new and exclusive agreement with agents, and agents own 65% of the shares of on the market. And they wanted to survive. They wanted to beat on Rightmove because, let's be honest, if you're an estate agent, what do you want to pay? 300 quid a month or £1,000 a month? And have shares in the one you pay 300 quid a month with. Of course, it's a no-brainer, isn't it? You're trying to do your best to help it, aren't you, really? Yes. Anyway.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
These companies just sit there. Honestly, I am confident. It's like a couple of times, Paddy said, "You're going to sell Polar Area now. It's risen a lot." I said, "No, I'm not going to sell that. I mean, we've just gone past 100 million. This company will be close. Honestly, I genuinely think it's close to its valuation is more realistic, closer to a billion. When we get past an FDA approval.
What percentage of portfolio is Polar Area for you?
Now, it's about 15%.
Yeah, okay. I'm about the same.
Yeah. And you know what? It's like, reading the, almost like having realization, times of realization, where you think sometimes when you've got, and I'm quite happy with the companies I have, you know, I'm not going to say they're all going to do the 10 baggers, but I think they'll get some of the way there. And so I'm happy to sit and wait. And I knew, you know, sooner or later, Polari would have a bit of a sell-off. It's bound to. You can't, you know, you can't do like, 50% in 3 or 4 days.
No.
And then not have a bit of a fallback. But what you get from this, if you look at the level of interest, you know, stacks up and more people get involved. So on the dip, more people buy. It rises again. Then people get the fear of missing out. Say, oh, you know, I should have bought the last dip. Or I didn't think it'd go any further. And there's the rolling momentum. That's what meant. See, analysts can't, you know, figure it in. They can't sort of formalize. Formulate. Any kind of valuation with momentum involved. Because you can say, in the next 5 years, yes, Polarin is worth, you know, 350 million. But then when you start getting there and, you know, you get volume going through the roof, it'll overshoot that mark by, you know, amazing amounts. So I see companies right now, so they've got no revenue whatsoever, you know, and they're just COVID testing stocks. And yet they are valued at more than Polarin. You're thinking, are you kidding? Polarin's got, you know, it's going to be around for like 20 years doing good stuff. Yeah. COVID testing won't. It'll be around for what, 6 months, 12 months maximum? You know, because if they get a vaccine and they know it works, they've been testing and they know it works, testing will go by the wayside, surely. Whereas Polarin, it's like valued at barely 100 million market cap, and it's going to be around for years, it's, you know, been in the industry for years. So, it's nowhere near yet. Yeah. Of course, it'll have spike ups like this. It'll come back down as well. But then it's up to you. Do you want to top up? I did say that today on Twitter when it was a big sell-off on Thursday. I said, looks like, someone said they didn't understand what I meant, but I said, seems like it's a buyer's / seller's day, depending on your outlook. And sometimes you buy, you can, if you see a dip in a stock that you think has that massive potential, you buy.
An opportunity, yeah.
If you're trading stocks and you're in a resource stock that you think, you know, this probably needs a fundraising, but 3 months' time, it's rallied nicely recently, then you're probably going to sell it. But I have no reason to sell the stocks I own because I think they'll be a lot higher in 2, 3, 4, 5 years' time, you know?
Absolutely.
No. I mean, if one rises to the point where it's taking up, you know, 100%, oh, I can't do that.
100%.
90% of your portfolio goes nuts. Yeah. Then, you know, you've got to sort of top slice a little bit and look for other opportunities. What do you think of the iPhone 12? Do you see it? Anything good?
It all looks very smart and flashy, but I don't think I'll be rushing out to buy one for a grand or whatever it is.
The interesting thing is the new shape of it, which is pretty much the shape of the iPhone 4.
Is it?
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's the same shape, exactly the same.
Oh, yeah, who told you that, Steve?
What do you mean, who told me that?
How do you know that? You've got an iPhone 4 in you. So, did you think, hang on a sec, I'll run to the drawer, there it is, iPhone 4, label up.
I think I have got an iPhone 4 upstairs, actually.
Yeah. I just remember the shape of the iPhone 4. Yeah. It was when it went from curvy to like the iPhone 12, like quite square.
Well, do you know what?
Reinventing the wheel.
Do you know what? I was nearly sold it. Very slick in their presentation, AR sort of. There's no Apple sort of, whoop, yeah, oh, theater, whoa! And this year, we've got rid of the jack. We've improved the camera. You know, anything there, you can get it in burgundy red.
I thought the best one was like, we're not going to give you headphones and a power socket anymore.
Yes, you're ripping us off.
You and can't make phone calls anymore.
No one talks anymore. We've gone away with phone calls.
Got rid of that feature. Yeah.
We don't like screens, so there's no screen. It's selling you a brick, a little. I'm going to charge you $5,000. Yeah, $5,000 for no screen, no connectivity. But I was sold by it almost, you know, because I got the iPhone X and I dropped my one, it drowned. I had to buy another one for like £300 from Music Magpie, one of those services there. And it's not any good. It's glitching all the time. And so I was going to get iPhone 12, as soon as iPhone 12 was out, and I was almost sold. I realised their big selling point was it's 5G. And I realised, I haven't got 5G. It can be a big sell, it's so fast. And I thought, hang on, where in this country is there 5G? Or just to go with a certain operation?
It's pretty much everywhere. But as I say to people, I was like, it was a big jump when we went from 2G to 3G and 4G. But it's just like, do you ever think your phone's too slow when you're out on 4G? I don't. It depends what you're doing, I guess, isn't it? But for WhatsApp messaging.
Facebook,
it's fine, isn't it? It's only going to benefit like gamers and stuff like that.
Yeah, latency.
Isn't us, really, is it? So.
Yeah, I suppose latency. I mean, again, though, you can't get it, so it's all better. And apart from that, it's the same old. It's like, the camera's slightly better. It's like, wow! You get all these checks. I mean, let's be honest, when the iPhone came out, it was phenomenal compared to what you had when they had Vodafone, or when you had the Vodafone 2 or 1 or whatever it was, and you had Snake and grey and white screen. Then the jump to the smartphone was massive, wasn't it? It was like something from a different planet. Yeah. Like the aliens had come down from future years and said, this is what we're giving you. You said, wow, where did that come from? And then it's now incremental. You know, small, incremental. Oh, yeah. I decided to talk about neural energy. They start trying to baffle you a little bit now. The neural engine is four times as strong. Is it, what are you talking about? What's that going to do?
I think the best bit, I think you're turned off by this point, Just, but they had a Hollywood producer come on when they were showing the video capabilities, and he was like, it's capable of shooting a Hollywood movie. And I'm thinking, yeah, I don't think you're going to be hired again if you turn up from a Hollywood director and you've just got a load of iPhone 12s there. Right, yeah. There you go, boys.
You're like, let's be honest, Steve. You know, you don't do Hollywood films, but if you went to turn up to do a promotion for a client, you took your iPhone, say, yeah, I didn't need this, they wouldn't be that impressed, would they? No, I turned off when it was a big, chunky lady on the roof of Apple talking about recycling all the bits. And I thought, I don't care about that. You now just give me all the nonsense I don't really care about.
Right.
I assume you're going to be, do you see it? Why is she on the roof just showing that's an amazing building, but that big circular building with all solar panels. That's what we're trying to show you, solar panels. We run, everything is on renewable energy. Everything we do. And I thought, love, you're probably eating enough for two people. So, you know, that is not economical, is it? So she was very unapple-like as a.
Well, by the sounds of it,
she was shaped like an apple. She's more like a peach. So I don't know. I'm not a violent. Unless we get some decent coverage, 5G, then that's the main selling point. 5G, and of course, the camera's slightly better. The colours are deeper, darker, true blacks. Oh, yeah. They've been saying that for ages. The black is truer. We know about that. The camera's good. We know that.
So, I'm buying the new iPad Air when it's released next week. Well, it's on sale next week.
Why?
That's pretty.
Why?
Well, I've got a really old iPad which is slowing down. I use it for work, and it's got the same chip as the iPhone 12. It's just like super. It's a massive upgrade in speed wise. It should last a good couple more years. But, yeah, it's just the fact that my old iPad's starting to stop now.
Yeah. But the thing is, you know, cameras on my iPhone now, iPhone X I've got, it's good enough, isn't it? I don't yearn for better quality photos. They're good, you know? How good can they be? They get to a stage where they're so good. Let's be honest, you put all fake filters on them anyway. That doesn't resemble real life most of the time anyway. So, you know, what's the point?
The filter most people use at the moment is that one that's got all grits and grain and makes the photo all dirty, which I don't quite understand. But,
less quality. I know, yeah, we are. Mm. So, but I was tempted, though. iPhone, I don't want iPhone mini, but it ranges from, I was saying, $499 for iPhone 12 mini. And then the biggest one with the biggest storage is $1,399, this is. But why would you want storage these days? If you've got Apple, in fact, they're clever. If you've got Apple, sort of, do you pay storage for £2.49 or something for a month?
No.
Oh, do you?
I don't, know.
Oh, so I mean, all the photographs. Well, yeah, because you're a kid, you take a lot of photographs, didn't you, really? And now you've got a dog, you take a lot of photographs. So they all just get jammed. It's very clever. They just clog up your storage.
Yeah.
Pay $2.49. You get 200 gig in the cloud anyway. So I don't want it on the phone, really. So, that's a false economy, isn't it? Because if I'm paying, how much? If I'm paying that, how much is that a year? £25.
30 quid.
Okay. If I buy that for 10 years, £300.
£300.
I could have gone for the bigger iPhone memory chip. It doesn't make any sense, does it? It's worth going for the £249 a month. Anyway, anything else, boys? Any plans this weekend?
No, I think we've gone way off track,
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, everybody, to the bitter end.
Yeah, yeah. I need to get on with my stir-fry, so...
Oh, yeah, sorry, Steve.
That is knackered, Steve. Oh, you haven't started stir-frying it yet, have you?
No, I've just cut all the ingredients up.
Okay. Paddy's got how many more days? We're less than halfway through October now. Paddy said SO4 salty potash. It's 40p by end of October, December for me, January, Pete, Steve, March, yeah. Playing safe. I think you'd be past that by March, Steve, because it'd be more like 60, 70 pence then.
I think January looks good.
What's that at the moment?
I think December's good. Well, it dropped back a bit on Thursday, but let's have a look. It hit...
close to about 30.
Yeah, it hit 30... High 33 on Monday, and again today.
Oh, it's come out 31.
No, 31.5. So, yeah, listen, I think December's a very good call by me. All right, lads.
That's
nice to chat to you. Have a nice weekend, all right? Yeah, by the way, video this weekend. What's the video? I've noticed, Steve, you're not watching the videos very often, yeah?
How do you know?
I just know.
It does now.
Because basically you ask me everything in WhatsApp that I've done on the video. So just watch the video, yeah? Right. All right, boys. That's your research, Steve. Beyond What's the Ticker. Steve, that is your investment book. Beyond What's the Ticker by Steve Martin.
I used to watch the videos. It depends how busy I am in work. If I'm busy, I don't watch them.
You're in lockdown. How busy can you be, very much?
Yeah, stop stir-frying your vegetables and watch the videos.
Yeah.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.